Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi there, and welcome to Ticket for One, the podcast that celebrates female solo travel. My name is Kate Wills, I'm a travel journalist, and each week I'm going to be speaking to a woman who inspires me about her adventures alone. Today's guest is the travel and nature writer Ginny Reddy. Ginny has been a travel journalist for many years, reporting from around the world for publications like The Guardian, The Telegraph, and National Geographic Traveller. In 2016, she wrote her debut book, Wild Times, about her experiences of connecting with nature in Britain. And I recently read Ginny's latest book, Wonderland, about her quest to find the spiritual side of the UK. In Wonderland, Ginny goes on solo adventures in search of everything from secret labyrinths to women who worship the goddess. I'm not surprised that it was shortlisted for the Wainwright Prize. Ginny was born in London, grew up in Montreal, Canada, and her parents are of Indian heritage from apartheid-era South Africa. She's also lived in Provence, Georgia, and Hong Kong. I'm always very aware of the lack of diversity in travel writing, and also that as a white, middle-class woman, I travel with a layer of privilege that not everyone enjoys. So I was keen to hear Ginny's experiences of what it's like to travel the world alone as a woman of Asian descent. We also chatted about quitting her job and going hiking in Nepal without a plan or any walking experience, the time she met Mother Teresa while looking for the toilet, and a five-night vision quest she did in the Pyrenees with a shaman and a yeti. Hi, Ginny. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. I'm really looking forward to this.
Oh, that's so kind. I absolutely loved Wonderland. I basically read it in one sitting.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm really touched. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I just thought it was great. And it really resonated so much with the way that I like to travel and kind of not having a plan and just kind of walking and being open to your surroundings. So yeah, I just thought it was fantastic. For people who haven't read it, the book is all about a search for magic, really, or the kind of the other in the landscape. But I think that it's also about the magic that can happen when you're traveling by yourself too. Was that an important part of the book, that you were having some of these adventures solo?
Yes, I think it was a huge, huge part, because as I say in the book, the way I traveled, you know, it wasn't an A to B kind of journey. I wasn't sticking pins on a map, because I was searching for the magic in the landscape. I wanted to enter into the spirit of that. And that meant invoking the divine in the landscape and following my intuition and practicing deep listening and going in and connecting deeply within myself and within the nature around me. And I don't think I could have done that easily with somebody else. And it was a kind of a pilgrimage in a way, the whole book and the whole journey. And those are best done either on your own or with somebody of like mind.
Absolutely. And I think especially as women, when we do kind of take these trips by ourselves, it's often when we're sort of seeking something or searching for some kind of
higher meaning. What have been your experiences of solo travel? I know that you've traveled extensively and you've lived abroad as well. What, tell me kind of like your first sort of ventures into going it alone.
Well, I was thinking about that, and I think when I was 13, my parents put me on a plane. I was living in Canada, so I was born in the UK, grew up in Canada. My mum and dad are Indian from South Africa. And so when I was 13, my parents put me on a plane and I went to visit my sister, who then lived in the Scottish Highlands. So that was my first experience.
Wow, that's quite young then.
It was, yes.
How did you feel about it?
Excited and scared, because I had to change planes in Heathrow, and that was a very big deal for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then obviously when you got there, your sister was there. But what about some kind of travel experiences that you've embarked on?
So if we're talking about travel that it is not about, you know, commissioned travel that I've done as a travel writer, you know, those lovely bespoke trips where you go off and got a guide catering to your every whim.
Yeah.
So proper solo travel. I think my first big adventure, when I decided to quit my job, I was in my 20s, and I had this idea that I was going to go to Nepal and become a volunteer. And now, this was pre-internet, and I didn't know what I was going to do exactly. I didn't plan it very well. I wrote a letter, you know those things.
I remember those, yeah.
a friend of a friend of a friend, basically inviting myself to stay with them, and I didn't get a reply, and somehow I just assumed they would be waiting for me at the airport. And I quit my job. I was working in publishing at the time, and I turned up in Nepal. You know, I'd had this big going away party. I flew to Nepal and I turned up, and of course there was nobody waiting for me. And so, you know, the first 24 hours were really traumatic, quite a shock to the system.
Yeah, wow.
And then I decided, you know, I got my wits about me, and I decided I was going to go trekking on this 21-day Annapurna circuit trek. And I didn't have a group to go with, you know, I didn't have there were no Sherpas carrying my kit. I'd only ever hiked day hikes in the Peak District. I bought a rucksack from the market, and it was this like flimsy number, and I think the strap broke on day one. But I met somebody the day before I planned to go out on my own, which is pretty crazy, you know, doing this is a major hike. It's a 21-day hike. And he said, you know, I'll come with you. And I'm so grateful to him, because this hike involved crossing a 5,500-meter pass. It's one of the highest passes in the Nepalese Himalayas. I mean, I was totally clueless. But, you know, this trip was a very big deal, because although it was very challenging, it was also very beautiful, and it kind of gave me my travel legs, so to speak.
I bet it did. I love that. I love the confidence of youth that you had, that you were just like, yeah, I'm just going to do this massive trek by myself. That's amazing. And, you know, you've kind of not really looked back since. And that kind of love of nature and hiking is a big part of your travels, I know. If you had to pick your best solo travel moment, what would it be?
I think it's been those moments when I've had very immersive, sustained experiences in nature. And I think one that springs to mind, and this is in the book as well, it kind of kickstarted things in some ways. I went up and did this five-night fast and wild camping kind of vision quest in the Pyrenees, completely on my own for 5 days and 4 nights. I had a tent. I had 9 bottles of water, almost no food, you know, an apple and some nuts. And this shaman had walked me up there, and, you know, because we'd done it in this particular way. And he'd said, you know, this is the right peak for you, and see you down the mountain in 5 days. And by the way, the Yeti lives in that forest right nearby.
Okay. Good to know.
So this was a
wow.
This was a very immersive 5 days, and I had to confront a lot of fears, and I heard a very strange noise on the first night, and yeah. So I'd say that really that experience, it was very immersive, and it stayed with me for a long time. In terms of the kind of solo travel where I've gone out into the world and into a city, and I think the time that I ended up in Calcutta. So after I had left Nepal, I still wanted to volunteer. And somehow I found my way to Calcutta and ended up volunteering in an orphanage. And, you know, this was a very, quite a transformative time for me, because I'd always lived in a very, you know, nice neighborhood in Montreal. And suddenly I was confronting poverty up close. And, you know, since then I've experienced India as a travel writer, you know, with lovely accommodation. And I've experienced the wealth in India and middle class India. But this was, you know, poverty, raw poverty up close and in my face. And it just really shook me. It took me out of myself. And it made me realize that people live in vastly different ways. That really stayed with me.
Wow. And was that when you met Mother Teresa? Is that time?
Yes, I was volunteering with Mother Teresa myself and, you know, loads of volunteers. And obviously, you know, I think we got more out of it than the children did, because, you know, they stayed in the orphanages. We would come, we would visit, we would give some love, and then we'd go. We were very privileged to be able to do that. They couldn't, you know, it's important to stress that. But yes, it was, I met Mother Teresa. The way I met her was, for me, amazing. I remember turning up at her headquarters because I wanted to use the loo. They had a nice loo. And I could see her talking to some businessmen and I didn't want to interrupt. So I went to the loo. And when I, you know, quietly scuttled across, and when I came out, I felt this hand on my forehead, patting my forehead. And this woman, you know, I looked down and I could see these very gnarled feet in sandals, and this woman patting my head saying, "Bless you, my child, bless you, my child." And I looked up and it was Mother Teresa.
Wow, good decision to go to the loo then.
Yeah,
good loo trip. Wow, I mean, that's amazing. And you're, I really wanted to say, I love in the book how honest you are about, you know, how difficult it can be being on your own sometimes. You know, you do go into the low moments, I suppose, as well as the highs. And the bit that stuck out for me was, I think you were on Iona, the island, when you felt too shy and nervous to go down to the pub. So you just sort of stayed in your room and ate some apples. And that really, felt very familiar to me when, you know, you can be brimming with confidence by day and exploring all these things by yourself. And then, you know, in the evening, it's just too intimidating to go by yourself to a restaurant,
yes,
or the pub. What are some other hard things about traveling alone, and how have you kind of overcome them?
Well, definitely, you know, what you've just said, eating alone in the evening, I find that the hardest thing in the world, particularly when you're in a country where people generally don't do that. You know, where the locals don't do that. So you have to sort of, you know, I've had to sort of brace myself and push the door of the restaurant open. And it's just so uncomfortable. And the way I get around that is, you know, sometimes I just scarf down my meal and left in a hurry. Other times I've tried to take a book. But am I really reading my book? No, not really. Or a glass of wine can help. Yeah, so I say that for me is the toughest thing. I think once, as a travel writer, I remember I was commissioned and I went to Mumbai and I was supposed to go and visit this nightclub. And of all, in India, of all places, I mean, you know, nightclub in Mumbai, women don't go to nightclubs on their own. And there I was, on my own, having to go to this nightclub. And so I think I had a drink and then I had another drink. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to go. And I remember there was a long queue and there was a sign that said, you know, men on their own were not allowed in. And I remember thinking, well, what about women on their own? You know, what? And going in and just standing at the bar for 45 minutes. I think I had this man on my left and a man on my right. And I think they just thought, who is this very strange person? And made small talk for 45 minutes and then left.
You did clubbing. You went clubbing by yourself.
Yes.
Tick.
I thought that was very brave.
Really brave. Really brilliant.
Yeah, and I also just the loneliness sometimes when you're traveling alone. I mean, it's unavoidable, the loneliness. There are moments, you know, not being able to turn to somebody and say, well, what do you think? Should we do this or should we do that? Or not being able to share something beautiful.
Absolutely. And you kind of have to make all the decisions, which can be brilliant and liberating, but it can also be quite tiring, can't it?
Yes, definitely.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight.
Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And in the book, you talk about how, I suppose, conspicuous you can sometimes feel being an Asian woman, especially traveling in certain places or among that sort of outdoorsy camping culture, which still seems to be very white and also very male in a lot of places. Tell me what that feels like and how it's kind of shaped your travel experiences.
I think that's always been the case wherever I've gone in the world. At some part of my brain, I'm always thinking, you know, no matter how excited I am, I'm always thinking, how will I be received? Will people be friendly? Will they not be friendly? You know, and I think in the UK, particularly in the countryside, when I come to a pub, I'm always bracing myself before I enter a pub, because I'm pretty sure, you know, as you say, the countryside is a very white environment. And very rarely do I see somebody who looks like me in a pub, and you know, a woman on her own anyway is relatively unusual. And a woman of Indian heritage on her own is doubly so. So, you know, I walk in and I'm aware of being clocked. And the people looking, you know, the eye is drawn to difference, and, you know, people may be thinking nothing, maybe be thinking something positive, they may be completely indifferent. But for me, it's disconcerting. You just never quite know what the welcome will be like. And I have to say, I've had largely positive experiences, otherwise I wouldn't have written this book. And I wrote another book before that to do with nature and a guidebook to do with Britain. And so I wouldn't be doing these things if I didn't have positive experiences. But there's this other thing going on all the time.
Yeah, always in the back of your mind kind of thing.
Even as a travel writer, I think that's really interesting, because I've gone on trips, you know, these lovely bespoke trips, and I've turned up and the host, I can tell, is just slightly taken aback, particularly when it's a high-end trip. I'm just not what they were expecting. And I remember once going to Colombia, and my guide was blonde, and everywhere we went, everyone thought I was the Colombian. And
oh,
she was the guide, which I didn't mind at all, because I thought that was, I took that as a compliment.
If anybody, yeah, you fit right in. You're just like such a local already. But yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I think when you are living in London or any sort of very multicultural city, you kind of take it for granted that people will have, you know, experienced other people from, you know, all different backgrounds and races. But I guess in some places that you travel to, that's not always the case. And that must be like just a different experience, I guess.
Yes. And also, you know, there are positives as well. There have been times when I met people from Indigenous cultures, and I have found it easier to bond with them, because, you know, there's no whiff of colonialism about me, however distant. There's no differential lowering of eyes. I've been othered, they've been othered, so it's easier for trust to form. And women of color in particularly in villages abroad, you know, I sense their trust and curiosity and warmth and ease. But at the same time, in countries particularly like India, you know, people put white people on a pedestal. So I may not get, you know, the fantastic treatment that somebody would get if they were white. So there are all these nuances going on all the time.
Really interesting. And travel writing, of course, is a genre that's, you know, still very white and male. Do you feel like things are getting more diverse? And why is it so important that we have diversity in travel?
Well, I think things are beginning to change. And I think particularly since the Black Lives Matter protests, there's been a greater awareness amongst commissioning editors of the need for greater diversity. But why do things need to change? When I read features, you know, lazy tropes about exotic landscapes, well, it's not exotic to the people who are from this place, but they're, you know, they're not considered when people are writing these things. Because if you don't have somebody from another culture writing an article, you're never going to consider that. What else? People from abroad or other, they're treated as a colorful backdrop. Colonialism seen through the misty haze of misty nostalgia.
Yeah.
Colonialism for the colonized was not a fun thing. It involved slavery and genocide and displacement. You know, like my pet peeve is articles which talk about places to work on your tan.
Yeah, that's so true.
You know, who are you writing for exactly? You know, why is the assumption that your reader is white? And also, oh God, articles that talk about how fantastically welcoming the locals are. And I'm thinking, would they be welcoming towards me? Would they be welcoming towards a black male or a black woman? So, you know, that's why it's important. It's very important.
Yeah, just to kind of check your perspective, I suppose, as well as your privilege.
And you know, the more people who are in the room, the more interesting the stories are. I just think you basically get more interesting stories.
Totally. And especially, you know, as you mentioned, your parents being South African Indian and then you yourself born in London, but grew up partly in Canada. So all of those kind of different backgrounds inspiring your perspective on travel and where you're going, and just that kind of breadth and diversity in the background, I guess, makes for a richer piece of writing often.
I think so. Yeah, I definitely think so. And I've had a lot of positive feedback, you know, from the book, from that angle, because you don't see a lot of people of colour writing books, particularly to do with nature writing.
Yeah.
The book straddles travel, nature writing and spirituality, I guess.
Yeah, just being in nature generally, I think, in certain parts of the UK and the US, you know, I'm thinking of that incident that, you know, we all heard about a few months ago in Central Park of the Black Bird Watcher, and how, you know, for some people, it's being on their own in a kind of like remote place doesn't always feel safe or comfortable.
I often feel safe on my own in the countryside, because I feel, you know, from a shamanic perspective, I guess I feel quite protected by the nature around me. But I do wonder, for instance, if you're, you know, a black male on your own in the countryside, you know, how are you going to be perceived? You don't see too many black male hikers. So what are you going to be dealing with? On the other hand, I have friends who live in the countryside and they're very open-minded. They're very wonderful, you know, quite wonderful, broad-minded people. So I don't think people are inherently more racist in the countryside than they are anywhere else. I think it's more that it is a very white environment and people are not used to seeing people who are black or Asian or from other marginalized backgrounds quite so much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I'm like every other woman, you know, if I'm hiking along and you know, there's somebody sort of following along and I can't lose them, well, you know, I'm like every other woman, I'll sort of change direction, you know, head to the nearest farmhouse or something.
Yeah, I think as women, we often sort of have a bit of an inbuilt sort of protection system where if we don't feel comfortable, we have our strategies. And we all have our, you know, prejudices and biases that are working all the time. You know, that guy might not be a threat at all, but, you know, in your head, it's like, oh, I'm alone and I'm in the middle of nowhere. So suddenly it feels
exactly
like, yeah, a different thing. Do you have any tips for solo travel first timers, particularly women?
I think, you know, there are the obvious tips. So first of all, the obvious tips, things like doing your research, read books by authors from the places you're going, find out about the culture and the do's and don'ts, be respectful, dress modestly, check out the political situation. Don't wander alone at night. You know, be open and friendly, but know your boundaries. But I also think, you know, particular to first timers, women going solo is just accept that you will feel some anxiety. You know, that's actually part of it. And try to trust that that will dissolve once you get going. I think one of the loveliest things about traveling solo is when you get to that sweet spot, when you kind of have got through the discomfort and you're really enjoying yourself and you've kind of done it on your own steam.
Yeah, it's so empowering, that feeling, isn't it? You're like, I did it.
Yeah, I did it. But also if you're hiking alone, if you're considering going off on some great big long multi-day hike somewhere far flung and you've never done any hiking before, you know, just try going on a day-long hike in the UK.
Yeah, it's a good tip.
I always, when I hike, I always take a walking stick. It's very good if you get, you know, dogs growling at you, and it just gives you a feeling of confidence. And I carry a whistle. I'd say I carry a map, but I can't read maps very well, so that never really helps me very much.
I'm terrible at maps too. That's so funny, isn't it? Everyone always thinks, oh, you're a travel writer, you must have a great sense of direction. It's like, no, just permanently lost. And are there things that you always pack when you're going by yourself other than the walking stick? And
I think just the obvious stuff. You know, I always pack a whistle, but, you know, a notepad, laptop, phone. Sometimes I carry a shawl because that gives me a feeling of coziness in the evenings.
That's really important, isn't it? To feel kind of, if you haven't got that human comfort or connection, I think it's really important that you feel warm and comfortable in what you're wearing, actually, yes, when you're traveling.
What kind of solo travel do you like to do?
All kinds, really. I mean, I have recently been getting quite into my walking as well, actually. Definitely not a pro hiker by any means. But yeah, I just got back from the Lake District, actually, where, you know, I went for some really lovely walks and did feel very towny. I like the bit in your book where you think, oh God, everyone's going to think, oh, she's looking at her phone, you know, typical Londoner. And in the lakes, obviously, you know, there's some real like serious outdoors wear going on, and I was there in my kind of Nike trainers and a leather jacket, which probably was just the really wrong thing to wear, but yeah, had an amazing time. Yeah,
that is so brilliant. You know, I'm not expert at all. I mean, I'm a really kind of bumbling hiker. I just want to do it, but it doesn't mean I'm an expert. I think people stop themselves from doing things because they're afraid that they need to be good at things, and because it can be intimidating. Like you say, in the Lake District, there are all these super hikers, the right kit. You can feel that if you don't have the right kit,
that you shouldn't even try or something. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's really true. I think in lots of areas of life, actually, like you don't need to wait until you're like fully qualified or, you know, 100% ready. You know, sometimes you've just gotta go for things with, you know, the wrong kit and no map, and just kind of wing it a bit, which is what I like. Tell me, where's next on your list? I mean, I'm guessing like everyone, your travels have been on pause for a little while.
Yes, actually next week I'm going to the Isle of Lewis in the Hebrides.
Ooh, yeah. Interesting. Is that somewhere you've been before?
I've been to the Hebrides before. I've been to Iona once, and it features in Wonderland. But I've not been to the Isle of Lewis before. I think I wanted to a long time ago because the beaches look incredible. I heard this story once that an island in the Caribbean used a picture of a beach.
Really?
On the Isle of Lewis in their brochure and didn't tell anybody where it was.
Wow, that's amazing. So, you know, Caribbean beaches await you, hopefully.
But I'm going with a very good friend, and it's the kind of friend, you see, this is the thing about traveling with somebody, it's got to be the kind of person you can be with and not feel you have to talk all the time. Somebody who appreciates, you know, who also needs their own time, so you don't feel you have to be together all the time. That's really important too.
Yeah, that's key, isn't it? And that's actually a nice way, I think, if you're a bit nervous about doing a solo trip, is, you know, maybe you go with a friend and then you split up for a couple of days and then you reunite and share what you've experienced can be quite a nice way of getting a taste of it without actually just being solo.
I think that's fantastic. And you just enjoy each other's company so much more too.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, well, Lewis is going to be great. Wow, I bet there's lots of magic and mystical experiences.
Well, beautiful wildlife, definitely. Probably rain, unfortunately. But I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Ginny, for coming on the podcast and sharing your solo travel experiences.
Well, thank you for having me.
I find Ginny's approach to solo travel so inspiring and totally agree that the best adventures are about far more than just getting from A to B. But I also know that when holiday time is precious or your budget is limited, it can feel really difficult to rip up the checklist of must-sees and just go where the wind takes you. So here are my tips for how you can plan to have no plan. Try and give yourself at least one day on a trip with no obligations or reservations or plans, and just let yourself explore and be spontaneous. Yes, you might miss that world famous art gallery, but that's not going anywhere, and you might end up discovering something a bit more interesting instead. I also know people who literally put a pin in a map when deciding where to go on their next adventure. A more modern alternative might be to use the website Skyscanner's Anywhere search function, which throws up flights to random destinations. EasyJet's app also has a lucky trip widget, and Google Earth has an I'm feeling lucky button, both of which let you spin the travel roulette and see where you might end up. If you find yourself at a loose end and you're looking for something to do, it can be fun to grab a local listings magazine, flick through it without looking, and just stop on a random page. Whatever's on it is where you're going that night, which can end up in some pretty interesting scenarios. That's all from me. Thank you so much for listening to Ticket for One. I'll be back next week, or you can follow me on Instagram at Kate Wills Writes. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do rate and review it, as it really helps with getting a new podcast out there. And please share your questions and your experiences of solo travel with me by emailing ticketforonepodcast@gmail.com. I hope to see you next week, and goodbye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.